spins a web any size. Catch your seeds just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man.
The world outside your window may not be so great, but here on Post Show Recaps, everything is Spider-Man! It's Spider-Man season here on the Everything is Super podcast as we are swinging away from our MCU Infinity Saga rewatch to talk about Spider-Man for the next several weeks. And I'm joined here, I'm Josh Wigler, I'm joined here by Kevin Mahadeo. Kevin, I hear a rumor that anyone can wear the mask, and that indeed everyone should wear a mask.
We'll grow into it if we can't quite wear it yet.
Yeah.
Because we're getting no refunds. You're in now. You're in forever.
Everyone
you're
wear
listening
the mask.
To our podcast.
Wear the mask. Wear the mask. And Spider-Man certainly wearing the mask. And all of the Spider-Men that we have to talk about in the weeks ahead, Kevin. Because we're going to be talking about a lot of Peter Parkers. We'll get into some Miles Morales at some point. But we're talking about a bunch of different Spider-Man movies over the next couple of weeks as we are, we're swinging into one of the, I would say, like the flagship superheroes of the genre. You probably think yeah. it's like before the MCU, right? It was like Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Spider-Man. I feel like those are like the top four.
I mean, yeah, I guess, right? Like, I would even just say, like, the only ones that really mattered were Spider-Man and Batman. That was it.
If there can only be one from each side of the aisle, from DC and Marvel, it's Batman and Spider-Man for a time.
Yeah, absolutely. Spider-Man is huge, huge, and has been for a very, very long time. I think it's undebatable to say he's one of the most popular Marvel characters, and
he's the most popular Marvel character. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
it's
like,
over.
He
that's
changed.
The, that's
you know,
it. He's the one. Yeah. It's him. It's Spider-Man.
It's him. I think, and that's the thing. I think among comics fans, you could be like, oh, maybe Wolverine, but like publicly, it's Spider-Man.
No,
it's Spider-Man. Who doesn't like Spidey? Except J. Jonah Jameson.
You know, J. Jonah Jameson doesn't like Spider-Man. A bunch of Spider-Man's enemies don't seem to like Spider-Man. A bunch of Spider-Man's classmates may have some issues with Spider-Man. Like in universe, the public seems divided on Spider-Man. Out of the context of the stories, I think we're mostly unified that Spider-Man's legit, Spider-Man's awesome, Spider-Man's been awesome. Spider-Man, I think, is the character that really defines the Marvel brand in a very big way, even though a lot of those original Marvel Comics characters are strikingly different from the DC Comics staple. And I think that there are certainly ways in which we can talk about that, though maybe those are conversations we want to save for later on down the line in a future podcast when we turn our sights to the DC universe, as we will inevitably do. Gird yourself appropriately, Kevin. But for the next few weeks, we're going to talk Spider-Man. We'll be back on our MCU nonsense before too long, I'm sure. As soon as WandaVision comes out, we're going to definitely cover WandaVision. But we're going to cover the Spider-Man movies for the next little while. We're going to do the Spider-Man trilogy from Sam Raimi over the next 3 weeks, starting next week. Then we're going to do the Andrew Garfield Amazing Spider-Man duology. Then we're going to do Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes,
I don't know
yes,
that
yes,
I don't
yes,
know that
yes.
we're going to do Venom. I don't know.
We'll see.
Do y'all need Venom? Do you need us to do Venom? Can we just talk about Venom when we get to Spider-Man 3? Maybe that would be ideal.
Nobody needs Venom. I think that's a full statement on just even the comics industry. Nobody needs Venom.
I mean, I think we have to talk about Venom conceptually as we are talking about Spider-Man and his place writ large. But this felt like a very natural shift for us because I think like timing-wise, I think it's going to map out pretty closely where my guess is WandaVision is going to come out somewhere around end of the year, maybe very end of the year, very beginning 2021. Somewhere in there is my guess. It's just a guess. And I think that the Spider-Man schedule is going to get us right up to WandaVision. So that's pretty clean. That's my prediction. Knock on wood, Kevin. I heard it. So that counts for both of us. So it feels like it's a good fit, but it also feels very natural because we ended with Spider-Man Far From Home, our Infinity Saga rewatch that as of this recording remains the most recent Marvel Cinematic Universe film that has been released. Even though that was 2019 and we are looking at the very end of 2020 right now. And
thank God
it's in production for the third MCU Spider-Man movie right now, has started up production in Atlanta, and there are rumors flying fast and furious about what it could be about. And it seems very likely that there is some sort of multiverse angle involved. You know, the multiverse is lightly teased, and like introduced as kind of a lark in Far From Home with Mysterio, like, basically, like, you know, pantsing S.H.I.E.L.D. and being like, yeah, multiverses are real and I'm from, you know, a totally different Earth. Definitely not making this up out of my ass. but it seems like Spider-Man 3, the MCU Spider-Man 3, might actually go there, considering that there's Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness is coming up and not terribly long from now. And Doctor Strange himself is going to have a role in this third Spider-Man. In addition to that, Jamie Foxx, who played Electro in Amazing Spider-Man 2, has been announced as being part of this third MCU Spider-Man movie. On top of that, already in Far From Home, the king of the post-credit sequences, according to our Infinity Saga rankings, is the return of J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson, one of Spider-Man's great arch-nemeses, media-facing bad guy. Those guys are definitely dastardly as well. And Triple J is high on that list. And J.K. Simmons, who's iconic in that role, makes that cameo appearance. And that starts bridging the universes together a little bit more. And we may come to find out, Kevin, that it's more than just like you can only cast J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson because why bother otherwise? It may be because there is a link from the MCU to the Sony stuff. Spider-Man, unlike the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe characters, is not fully owned by Disney. He is a timeshare. He is a holdover.
Shared custody.
Shared custody with his parents, Disney and Sony, where he was sold. The film rights were sold to Sony once upon a long time back in the 90s, I believe. And Sony has clung on to those rights like Spider-Man to a wall. And it is nothing short of miraculous that some sort of, and I think also just a sign of epic failure on Sony's part in mishandling the live action Spider-Man films, that we were able to get into a situation where Disney was like, can't we work something out? Everyone wins if you let us work this out. And so they worked it out, and there's been some bumps and bruises along the way, but they've mostly worked it out. I believe the word on the street is Tom Holland is on for two more MCU movies at the least. And then who knows what'll happen. So it's at least that third Spider-Man movie. And then who knows what comes after that. So I think it's highly relevant to be taking stock of Spider-Man right now, as it's an active MCU project, Kevin. It's one of the single most popular characters in pop culture history. And we may be talking about movies right now in the weeks ahead that are actually going to have relevance in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's not entirely impossible that is the case.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, especially as we're going through this, right? Like, I think part of what we're going to have to do is look at these movies and think, okay, how does this mesh and how does it compare to what could possibly be happening in this third Spider-Man in the future of the MCU? Like, how does Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire fit into this, if at all? I mean, you have Electro coming in, which is probably the weirdest casting decision and choice to be made out of all of this, because I've never seen Amazing Spider-Man 2, but
whoa,
I certainly
really
know about it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no. Sometimes you can get punched a few times and realize, I don't want to get beat up anymore, and then you decide not to. So I avoided watching that.
Or you let yourself
another
out.
Analogy. Another analogy is like, I touched a hot stove when I saw Amazing Spider-Man 1, and then when the stove was back, I was like, I know that stove's hot. I don't want to touch it this time. So just avoided that one.
It has some things.
Does it? I've seen many things about it. I'm excited to delve into it. Jamie Foxx is one of the worst things I've seen about it, so it's an interesting casting choice here.
He's just in a different movie. He would be perfect in like a 1990s late 90s Batman movie.
That's weird that they didn't, you know, tell him that when filming a movie that he's going into being right then and there.
When we get there, I'll defend him a little bit. I don't think it's entirely his fault. I don't think it's totally his fault.
I mean, it's someone's fault.
It's definitely a few someone's faults. I don't know that it's... And he's not, you know, going to get off without some blame. But I think to throw it all at Jamie Foxx's feet doesn't feel right to me.
That's fair. But like, what's interesting about Spider-Man, right? We're going to see this like multiverse possibility. And I think that's... apt for what we're about to do in this podcast to set up, like, to the listeners what we're going to go with here is that we're going to be looking at Spider-Man through various incarnations, right? Like, we're going to kind of hit him in his comics, through animation, through video games, through live action. He's been everywhere because he, as we have mentioned, is probably the most popular character in pop culture from comics specifically. There is a multiverse of Spider-Man's.
Yeah,
just everywhere. So I'm interested to go into this deep dive because it's such a fascinating and enduring character that we're dealing with here. That has gone through so many incarnations, each feeling different from the last almost, and that we're going to experience as we dive into the movies alone.
Yeah. So in the weeks ahead, we're going to dive into the movies specifically. Today, we're setting down some of our takes. We're taking an overview of Spider-Man across multimedia, across the decades, just an overview of things, like Kevin says, some highlights from the comics, animation, video games. I'll just stump for action figures right now. I'll tell you, Kevin, when they came out with the multi-posable Spider-Man figure by Toy Biz back in the 90s, and I got that for Christmas one year. Oh boy, it was just
a happy time for little Josh Wiggler.
Yeah. In our blended household where we did Christmas and Hanukkah, I was a lucky boy, and one year I got multi-posable Spider-Man, and that action figure. He was the best. He was the best. Spider-Man always lends himself to a great action figure. So we're going to talk about all of that stuff. If you're just eager for the movies and you want to skip this one, we totally get it, although I think you're going to miss out. Here's some information for you to have under your hat for the weeks ahead. We're calling on rankings. super@postshowrecaps.com. It remains our feedback email address. So send any feedback you've got there. Send any of your rankings. The things that we are rankings are the movies. The movies we are ranking are the three Raimi Spider-Man movies, the Amazing Spider-Man movies, Into the Spider-Verse. Send your rankings on a scale of 0 to 6 for those, for the villains of those movies as well as the spider suits. We'd like to know what you think about all the various different spider costumes that Spider-Man wears. And if you want to score the actors who are playing Spider-Man as well, we think that would be great too. So that's the fourth thing that you can send in rankings for. So super@postshowrecaps.com. Send it in that way. Kevin, before we dive in, I want to take a quick moment to shout out our sponsors for this episode of Post Show Recap. Support for today's episode comes from Progressive Insurance. Fun fact, Progressive customers qualify for an average of 6 discounts when they sign up for Progressive Auto Insurance. Discounts for things like enrolling in automatic payments, insuring more than one car, going paperless, and of course, being a safe driver. Plus, customers who bundle their auto with home or add renter's insurance save an average of 12% on their auto. There's so many ways to save when you switch. And once you're a customer with Progressive, you can get unmatched claim service with 24/7 support online or by phone. It's no wonder why more than 20 million drivers trust Progressive and why they're recently climbed to the third largest auto insurer in the country. So get a quote online at progressive.com in as little as 5 minutes and see how much you could be saving. Auto insurance from Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Home and renters insurance not available in all states, provided and serviced by affiliated and third-party insurers. Discounts vary and are not available in all states and situations. Kevin Mahadeo, I have to admit, every single time I just said auto, I was thinking about Otto Octavius.
What a character and what a haircut that man used to have in the comics.
He's a couple weeks away. We'll have a much bigger conversation.
We got good time for one of the most ridiculously named characters in comic books. Honestly.
Absolutely. That's Otto Octavius. Boy, oh boy. Listen to me.
Listen to me now.
Listen to me now. All right, Kevin. So Spider-Man appears. He first bursts onto the scene in the early 1960s. Is that 63? 60.
I think it's 62. I think 1962 is when he first appeared in Amazing Fantasy number 15. Was his first comic book appearance. It's an iconic cover where you have him swinging across the skyline, holding someone under his arms in the type of manner I hold Gus. Honestly, is what it looks like.
Kevin's dog, for those who have forgotten.
Yes, not a child. I'm not running around with a child like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is his first appearance, and You know, it's hard to. I obviously was not alive at that time.
But I don't know how obvious it was. It's possible.
And that's true.
Vampire. You could be like Morbius, a living vampire.
God, I wish I was
feasting on plasma.
Which plasma? They couldn't get up. They couldn't do blood. They were like, "Oh, blood. That's can't do that for children."
Love
it's a plasma.
That sweet plasma.
Ridiculous. But Spider-Man, you know, it's crazy because he came onto the scene, and it's hard to overstate how much I think that character changed comics. You know, before Spider-Man, you had characters like Captain America, you had the Fantastic Four at Marvel, and DC, who was like the king of comics at the time, right? You had your Spider-Mans, or not Spider-Mans, your Supermans, your Batmans, your Wonder Womans. You had these larger-than-life characters, Flash, Green Lantern. And all of a sudden, Spider-Man comes onto the scene, and he changed Marvel, and he changed, I think, the power structure almost between the big two, because Spider-Man was like the first character to really emphasize Peter Parker over like that superhero part, you know. It was really an emphasis on like the kid in the costume trying to struggle through life. It really focused on the like the man more than the spider, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Sure.
Which was very different from the way comics were then. It was so grandiose and super heroic. Superman was about Superman. It wasn't about Clark Kent, really. Like, yes, Bruce Wayne was a millionaire, but who can relate to that as well?
But that's
people
often
related to Spider-Man.
That's often sort of the divide, right, between Marvel and DC, is that there's something like very mythic and epic and grand in scale about the DC characters, where I think Marvel often gets credited as like they're a little more cerebral and human on the face of it, at least. Like with Superman, you're talking about a god, Wonder Woman, effectively a god, Batman, a god among men. And, you know, with Spider-Man, this is a guy struggling to pay his rent. With the X-Men, these are people who are trying to avoid persecution for who they are. These are people who are dealing with human struggle.
Yeah. And that was the thing, right? Like that kickstarted what Marvel became. That changed the face of Marvel, and it did create a divide, but it was a divide that DC has tried to replicate. And there's been a constant struggle, I think, amongst writers at DC about which side do they want to fall on? Because you have some writers like Grant Morrison who really do treat the DC characters like you're describing, where they're mythic, they're larger than life. And then you have other people who really want to delve into the human side, kind of follow what Marvel set up. I mean, the two fed off each other. I mean, it's a cyclical thing, and the best type of way for this industry to work is for the others to like learn from each other. But for Spider-Man, like at the time, like you had like a young teenager, despite the fact that he was drawn like a 37-year-old man and his aunt is drawn like a 96-year-old woman.
I was going to say that. So created by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. Shout out to the legends. I don't know that I, because like Tom Holland playing Spider-Man now and like really leaning into him as like, you know, baby boy Peter Parker. Like I just never really remember him being illustrated that way, other than like the Ultimate Spider-Man comics of the 2000s that really leaned in that direction. But from the onset, from like the Lee and Ditko stuff, like he's a high school guy who just so happens to look like a 45-year-old man, because that is definitely in my mind where like I'm conjuring up images of Peter Parker as he was in like early Spider-Man comics, like 70s Spider-Man comics. Like they really wanted him to be that young because he definitely looks like a man.
Oh, yeah, but that was the time period, right? Like, you look at The Blob from 1953 or whatever, and it's like Steve McQueen is supposed to be playing like a 15-year-old, and he's very clearly like a 40-year-old man. But that's like the standard for like the time period.
Culturally, we got soft. We got soft as a culture. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've gotten a lot better now to like actually cast teens as teens, but right. Back then it was just like, I don't know what children look like. No one knows how to draw teenagers.
Yeah.
It was similar for like, you know, Teen Titans. Like they were supposed to be teens, but those definitely looked like
adults,
36-year-old adults.
Yeah, who've already like, you know, they've sobered up. Some of them have been divorced, you know, lots of
exactly,
you know, lost jobs. Lots of life has hit them hard. Yeah.
Absolutely. And like Maybe that's what it was, right? Like Peter had lots of life happen, even at a young age, but there was just, I don't know, man, there was just so much about that character in the comics that I think I never, obviously, you know, I haven't read a lot of the Spider-Mans growing up. I got into Spider-Man, especially during the 90s as my first introduction, which we'll get to how that happened, I think, once we hit that part of this discussion. But like, obviously I went afterwards and read a ton of Spider-Man comics. I've been reading a lot of Spider-Man since, and so, like, I remember the 90s Spider-Man comics and how wacky and crazy they were. But it was always about that, and I think that's part of the appeal of this character, especially in the comics, is that Peter Parker was this teenager and this kid who got these powers, but as much as it was about him trying to save the day, is that he screwed up more often than not. He's trying to pay his rent. He's trying to take care of his aunt. He's trying to get good grades in school. There was a lot of relatable stuff, and I think what you're saying, though, right, like, by the time we came in, I think they tried to age him up in the comics, so, like, he graduated college.
He married Mary Jane.
He married Mary Jane. Like, we also grew up with this character in a way I think a lot of people and a lot of other, well, we didn't with a lot of characters, right? Like, Marvel is super weird because, and DC for that matter, the characters are almost who they are as they are and don't change. Batman has always been about the same age. Superman about the same age. Tony Stark has been about the same age. Spider-Man is one that I feel like we really did grow with that character, like, now that I'm thinking about it, right? Like, what other character do we have that really went through such a journey that later characters maybe mimicked, like the Teen Titans? But the idea of him growing up, marrying his high school sweetheart, this is all stuff that we were doing at the time too. Like, we got older, we're aging almost with him. Then, you know, some wacky stories happened that sort of regressed him, but it's so wild to think about that like, this was a character literally we kind of grew up with. Yeah. Which is weird.
Yeah, for me, I was never like a deep Spider-Man comics guy. In the 90s, my brother really was. I was more into X-Men comics in the 90s. Like, Age of Apocalypse was really my thing.
I mean, it's the best thing.
Yeah, I remember there was this. I don't have like the historian recall of like what the names of the arcs were or anything like that. But I like remember Bastion as the Sentinel bad guy from the 90s X-Men comics. There was the whole run where this guy named Joseph shows up and maybe he's an amnesiac Magneto and he can make out with Rogue and that's super hot. And they go to space with Gambit and Bishop. And I remember those were cool comics. I didn't really have like a big attachment to the Spider-Man comics at that time growing up. But my brother did, and I remember him. He was really into illustrating in the 90s. And he and I wanted to do our own comic book company as kids. So we had a couple of characters that we would come up with backstories for, and he would draw. And they were all, like, very clear rips on Spider-Man. Like, to the point of, like, I'm sure, like, some fairly deep tracing work went into creating one character whose name I shall not reveal in case we ever decide to revive the idea. Don't want to give up the goose this early on. I remember Scarlet Spider, a full red suited Spider-Man with like a blue cut off like sweatshirt,
a blue hoodie with the sleeves cut off. Like, that was the coolest thing in the 90s, though, right? Like, talk about like what a costume for the time period. But I remember as a kid being like, "Oh, that's so awesome! He's wearing a hoodie with his sleeves ripped off."
I remember that. I remember there being the Clone Saga, where for a time Marvel tried to convince everybody that Peter Parker was a clone and wasn't actually like real, and he was a clone of this guy named Ben Reilly, who was Peter Parker but blonde, and he was Spider-Man for a while, and then, no, Ben Reilly, you're the clone. And like, I think it, a very controversial storyline that at the time I thought was like, oh, neat, cool, my brother's name is Ben, my best friend's name is Ben, I love Ben.
So many Bens in your life.
And so I was like really pumped about it. So like, I don't have any kind of like, I think, close to normal center relationship with comic book Spider-Man. Like, those are probably the Spider-Man runs that I remember the best. There's been some really cool like Spider-Man graphic novel work. Is there Spider-Man The End? Isn't that the one where he's like a senior citizen Spider-Man in a post-apocalypse?
I believe it's called Spider-Man Reign.
Spider-Man and, Reign.
Yeah, there's either The End or Spider-Man Reign. They may be two different things, but there is like their take on like Spider-Man as like a Batman The Dark Knight Returns type character, which is not
weird,
right? Yeah. For Spider-Man. Like, that's You're confusing two characters on that one.
Yeah,
man, the comics were crazy, right? Like, everything you said there might sound like insane to the people listening who don't know, but believe us when we say, like, even people paying attention to comics, it was equally insane.
Yeah.
Like, the Clone Saga was a crazy time that, like, I vaguely remember reading some of it when it was happening, but I didn't keep up with it. Like you, I wasn't deep into the Spider-Man comics. I will admit, like, Ultimate Spider-Man is when I really got into Spider-Man comics specifically. But I was aware of a lot of that stuff. And historically, I now know. I mean, you look at the Clone Saga and it's sort of like how Spider-Man changed comics at the time when he first showed up to like restructure stuff. He also changed comics with the Clone Saga in causing it to like implode because like it was a storyline that dragged on way longer than it was supposed to. And it became like this like teasing thing that comics became to be like, whoa, never telling you the answer. And it like it caused like a major collapse.
Amazing.
So it's a witch. Spider-Man has had an effect both positive and negative.
Spider-Man's a weird character. Like when you stop down to think about like the history of Spider-Man just in comics, like I feel like it's not out of the realm of like canon even and in history for the MCU to do a very weird third Spider-Man movie. Like it feels like that actually makes a lot of sense. Like Spider-Man 2099 or like all of like the different like Venom associates and all of like the symbiote characters that come out of Spider-Man.
Symbiote.
Like there's a ton of very strange stuff. In the not very distant past, Spider-Man and Otto Octavius were one and the same, right? There was like the superior Spider-Man where Dr. Octopus is running around in Peter Parker's body. So like
that is correct.
They've done some strange shit with Spider-Man over the years and especially in the comics. And you mentioned, we talked about it a little bit before, Ultimate Spider-Man, which was early 2000s effort. Marvel does like this rebranding of the Ultimates line, which is like to like basically do like parallel universe stories of popular Marvel characters that they can like readjust a little bit. They can modernize to a certain degree. They can do different types of stories with familiar types of characters. And in that Ultimate universe, it's Peter Parker as like a kid, as like a high school kid. And he's very much a very queer, like high school kid. The rendering of that.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about a lot of the things that happened in Spider-Man when we were growing up and how crazy a lot of them, right? We talked about Clone Saga. We talked about them trying to do this. There was one storyline where Spider-Man found out he's like some descendant of a spider god and he started to turn into a spider and he has like weird Wolverine like claws.
Not far off from the musical.
It's, maybe we'll talk about that at the end, but Turn Off the Dark and then the Kimmy Schmidt sequel, Spider-Man 2, Too Many Spider-Men, which maybe what we're about to experience in Spider-Man 3, but
I don't know.
All that craziness was happening, right? Like that's a good point. We have all this nuts stuff going on with regular Spider-Man, the one who is now an adult, married, everything is going on. He has so much that happened in his life. And you have all this continuity attached to him. You have decades of continuity. The Ultimate Universe came in and they was such a smart move on Marvel's part to be like, we want to appeal to a new, younger audience, to not be beholden to these decades of continuity, to do these stories that modernize these characters. And they launched the Ultimate Universe to accomplish that. And again, hard to overstate the impact that had. The Ultimate Universe is where a lot of the stuff about the Avengers movies and how the Marvel Universe is being approached cinematically was drawn from. And that took Spider-Man, like you said, back to being a kid. It was a young teenage Peter Parker, familiar stories with a different world, kind of like what we've been getting with a lot of these things that again, reshaped what comics were at the time. And I think really smart. Like, that's to me, like I was saying, that's when I got into the Spider-Man comics. I remember going to a store here in California when I was visiting California at the time, and I went to was it Earth 2? It was a comic book shop, and I saw Ultimate Spider-Man. I didn't know what it was, and I bought one volume of it, and I went back to the hotel and I read it that night, and I blitzed through the entire thing. And then the next day I went back to that store and I bought the volumes catching up. I think there was like two or three more volumes, bought all of them. And then I started reading Spider-Man almost weekly or like monthly since then, Ultimate Spider-Man. I got obsessed with it. And I introduced him to a friend of mine, Will, who used to collect comics, fell out of comics. He bought all the trades off me and then went and bought the individual issues. I got him into like addicted to comics again really badly. Yeah, because of Ultimate Spider-Man, because he was a huge Spider-Man fan. Like that was his favorite character. He was the person that we're talking about. Like I said, it wasn't quite me until recently that I got Spider-Man. But Will loved it immediately. Like going back to that traditional Spider-Man, the one that we kind of knew, the one that like hooked everyone from the 60s and that we recognized was what the Ultimate Universe did. And then that spread to everything. I think there's certain elements now of the Spider-Man character that every incarnation that's successful keeps and does. That we're going to be seeing, and we can even use this to criticize why some of these movies aren't as good as the other ones. But The comics are wild. I mean, for anyone out there listening that wants to take the suggestion about what Spider-Man comics to read, I'm going to give it to Ultimate Spider-Man. Like, start there. Read that. All the other stuff, the older stuff, the regular Marvel Universe stuff is bananas and crazy. But Ultimate Spider-Man is what you want. I mean, that's where Miles Morales first shows up, like, is an Ultimate Spider-Man. The stuff that I think are touchstones for a lot of people who are being introduced to this character through other media now, it's going to be in that series. So, like, that's definitely my recommendation from the comic book side.
So that's the comic book stuff. And, you know, that's a conversation that's going to be ongoing, I'm sure. But Spider-Man would not be the cultural icon he was if it was just comics. You know, Spider-Man, the live action movies are the things that we're going to focus on here, as well as Into the Spider-Verse, because that movie is just spectacular. Haha. And we got to talk about it for sure, especially because I think it's going to be kind of like a culmination of the thesis point of what we're doing here, because that's a movie that literally deals in multiverses. So it's a great way to, like, you know, wrap all this up and talk about everything that we're going to be talking about over the next several weeks. But before that, like, Spider-Man's on TV. They have they had a, I think, a couple of live action Spider-Man shows. There's the 70s
show.
There
was a 70s Spider-Man live action show that I don't think I've ever seen.
I've seen a little Japanese bit of one. Yeah. And then there's the Japanese Spider-Man. Spider-Man, where he's like a motocross racer and he's got like a Megazord like the Power Rangers. Seek that stuff out at your own discretion. Obviously everybody knows the original animated series. The theme song is iconic. It's also the source of many internet memes, such as the two Spider-Men pointing at each other.
Like, that's the only thing from that series I think I've actually seen. I don't think I've actually seen an episode from that.
It's been a long time. I used to watch it and I really loved it as a kid.
That's wild.
Yeah. I used to love it.
That's crazy. Like, the theme song is what I knew. Like, it's so weird. Like, even before I feel like I knew who Spider-Man was, I had heard that song, you know? And then, like, I kind of, like, saw a picture of Spider-Man. I was like, oh, okay, that's Spider-Man. I'm talking about, like, being way as a kid, but that Spider-Man. Like, it's there. Like, people knew it, you know? And yeah, there was that, I think, was, like, the first big one. And then I do remember vaguely, especially after the fact, in the early 80s, there was Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, which was a weird show that teamed him up with Iceman from the X-Men and Firestar. I don't know. I mean, I get fire and ice. That's how that fits. I don't know how the hell Spider-Man fits into that mix.
It doesn't really make much sense to me either, but I didn't watch that one. I know of its existence. Good for Spider-Man branching out, getting some friends.
Yeah, having some great friends
squad
in his life.
Yeah. That'd be something that'd be great to see in a future MCU movie. Now that Disney's got the X-Men rights, maybe they can have Iceman and Spider-Man on like a Disney Plus show. That could be fun. I don't know anything about Firestar.
I don't know a ton about that character, besides like she has fire powers, which amongst many
she
people
was there
in
too.
Comics
she was there
have
too, I'm sure. Super cool.
Yeah.
We don't really know.
But yeah, I do think though, right? Like, this is all leading to, there was a lot of stuff before, but like for me and you, Spider-Man is recognizable because of one specific thing.
Yeah, I think for people of our age, of like who are like nerdy people in the 90s, who are like who are pretty young, who are still watching cartoons, and like there's like the nostalgia sweet spot of things like Gargoyles and, you know, shows of that nature, the X-Men animated show. This is definitely one of them, the animated Spider-Man series, which is absolutely my entry point to Spider-Man as a character. Like, that whole show, I've definitely seen every single episode of. I couldn't give you like immediate recall on all of it, but a lot of it is just like indelibly imprinted on my head, because it was very much to my like understanding now of like what I've read and what I've been exposed to, you know, very evocative of what that comic book experience was like, but truncated for like serialized animation form.
Yeah, and they did a really good job with that, I think. The same way for me, like, I got introduced to Spider-Man and the X-Men, especially through those animated series, and they opened up a whole door for me into the world of comics and into the world of Marvel. And I definitely remember watching both of them back to back on Saturday mornings. The impact of that show on my knowledge of comics is definitely drawn from there. And as I've gotten older and actually read the stories that they're based on, like, what an adaptation. Like, they really did pretty impressive jobs bringing a lot of the comic lore into the animated series in a way that was like digestible. And of course, that speaking of theme songs, right? Like that weird, like, you know, like not techno, but like that, like,
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, radioactive Spider-Man.
Yeah, we all have it in our heads.
Yeah. It's like epic guitar solos. Yeah.
I feel like I might be, I need to look it up, but I'm pretty sure Aerosmith was involved in that theme song.
Come on, stop it. It was Bono and the Edge. Everybody knows.
Okay.
Everybody knows where that came from.
This is like one of those things where it was, for a while, they were like, what's his name? James Lipton, was it, that wrote the Thundercats theme song, which is not
right,
true.
That's made up. Yeah.
That's
funny. But yeah, I think like this for me, like this wasn't just like my gateway into Spider-Man, but, as you convinced me on our Far From Home podcast, like you really made me like, you like cracked like smelting salts underneath my nose and like woke me up to like, yes, Spider-Man is such a portal into the greater Marvel universe. Not even the MCU, just the Marvel universe. Like Spider-Man's my first exposure to Daredevil, my first exposure to Punisher, my first exposure to the Kingpin. I learn about the Fantastic Four through Spider-Man. I learn about the vast array of villains that Spider-Man is up against, a ridiculous rogues gallery that I'm sure we'll talk about in greater detail later. But like through that character, Morbius, the living vampire, you know, there's so many. And it's a really fun access point to all of that stuff because he is that friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, that he's just swinging the streets of New York, and New York is the hub of the action for the Marvel universe. So it would only make sense that Spider-Man's going to interact with everybody. Like Spider-Man ends up being on like every major team in the comics at some point or another, right? He's an honorary Fantastic Four member.
Definitely a member of Fantastic Four, definitely a member of the Avengers. I don't know if he was ever officially a member of the X-Men.
I think he's had some affiliation at the very least.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
I mean, the Ultimate Universe, he was dating Kitty Pride for a long time. So they've done that as well.
You know, they've gone there. And this animated series, which I believe even culminates in a huge crossover, there's the Secret Wars. Straight from the comics that they render on the show that I think is like the grand finale. All of this is on Disney Plus, by the way, if you're feeling nostalgic and you want to like sink a few weeks.
I am now. Let me tell you. It's just
both the Spider-Man cartoon and the X-Men cartoon. Both of those are on Disney Plus now.
Like the thinking about all that stuff, man, like that was like, yeah, the intro to Electro for the longest time when I would read a Spider-Man comic, I would have that voice in my head, right? The voice of the character from the 90s cartoon would be the one that I would hear. The same way that like Kevin Conroy was like the voice of Batman, and still kind of is the voice of Batman when I read Batman books. It was just so impactful and did such a weird, crazy way of introducing the world of comics in a true way of the insanity of it all. Like Venom appearing on there. But that's a great call out because I absolutely remember the series finale. Like it's stuck in my head forever because the series finale is Spider-Verse. Like I may be wrong, but there's a possibility Dan Slott has said like he pulled from the series finale of the Spider-Man cartoon to do Spider-Verse when he did, because that finale involved Spider-Man going on a multiverse of madness trip. Like he joined together with all these other Spider-Mans from different universes to team up to take down a version of himself. It was so cool at the time, especially again, being a kid at that time who was being introduced to multiverse theory and all these like time travel stuff to have that happen in this cartoon. It was awesome. And there was like the spider. And what's cool is that they pull stuff from like throughout the series. So it was like, oh, that's the version of Peter Parker that never cured the fact that he had multiple hands coming out. Because yes, man listeners, spider. There was a point where, yeah, man spider is a thing where he turned into a literal spider and walked like a man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that series finale was really cool and really awesome, but is absolutely, I think the OG into the Spider-Verse is from that series. And yeah, man, I'm nostalgic now. I might have to go binge that over the weekend or something.
I really loved that show. There's some characters that just stand out to me, like Alistair Smythe. Yeah. Who, like, I don't know of in any other context other than the Amazing Spider-Man cartoon show from the 90s. But there were other shows too, none that I really got into. You know, I had like a big animation phase in the 90s growing up and like early 2000s, like when I was in college, and then probably like halfway into college, like I petered out on some of the Adult Swim stuff. And I just like, like, I'm still catching up on things I feel like I need to see, like Avatar The Last Airbender I finished. I'm getting close to the end of Legend of Korra. There's a lot out there that I'd be really curious to check out, but I basically missed like two decades of cartoons, and I feel like I missed out on... and maybe it was like out of loyalty, like I didn't want to watch other Spider-Man cartoons. I didn't want to watch other X-Men cartoons. Those were like my MCUs, right? Like those were like, for like my formative years, those were like, those were my mythologies. And I took them so seriously, and I couldn't get adjust to like other voices. Like other voices just like didn't work for, whether it's for Wolverine or for Spidey or for whoever. But they did Spider-Man Unlimited.
Yeah, there was a ton of series.
There's like a Nick Fury, like Spider-Man's an Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. show.
Yeah, and there was a lot of like kids shows for it too. Like The Spectacular Spider-Man was one. There was just self-titled Spider-Man, an Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon series. And to me, like, I don't know, dude, I hear what you're saying, but I feel like I'm even worse and snobbish, where it's just like, I don't like the animation style. This is for kids.
Right.
As if the original series wasn't also for a child when I was a young boy watching it.
You get protective. You get protective over your stuff.
Same. Like, I was never into X-Men Evolution when that happened.
Yes.
Totally. I got into Wolverine and the X-Men. That I liked. And then they burned me by canceling it because the merger happened.
No interest. And, zero interest. Ugh. I want nothing to do with it.
But yeah, I never kept up with the Spider-Man cartoons. In my looking up some stuff, I saw that they are bringing back Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Amazing.
As a animated series. So
incredible.
That's going to be interesting when that comes out. I'm curious to see how that plays. But
that's great. That's great.
For animation, I do think, right, like it's the 90s series. Like that's where it was for us. That like really introduced us to this character.
Yeah. In the spirit of television, while we're talking about television, let's take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back. We'll talk about more Spider-Man. All right, Kevin, talk to me about Spider-Man through video games. This is a way to it. Like, it's one thing to read Spider-Man, to watch Spider-Man, but to be Spider-Man.
To be Spider-Man. yeah, dude, video games, the video game, obviously video game industry is wild, but there were so many Spider-Man games. And in general, I think a lot of characters have a lot of games, but I feel like Spider-Man was like, that's a perfect example of how prevalent this character was for me. And this is super weird, but I remember this so deeply in my heart. When I was a kid, when I was super young, during the 90s, my first introduction to the Spider-Man video game, or as a video game, was this weird PC thing where you could create your own animated Spider-Man cartoon, where you would take, it was based on the animated series, and you could take screenshots and moments and characters and put them into a scene and move them around, and it was like almost like Flash animation, and you would just create a moment from the cartoon that you could do. And that was my first foray into Spider-Man in a video game sense. And I remember having a blast with it as a kid because I was making Spider-Man movies, basically, right?
That's cool.
It was a lot of fun. And like for the longest time, I thought I was a crazy person. Like that never actually, like sometimes you think you remember stuff as a kid and it was like, that never happened. I made that up. But thanks for the joy of the internet, I was able to discover like, this was real. It happened.
Can you use it now? Is it like, has anyone like emulated it?
I doubt it because I think it was like a rights thing as well. So I feel like because it was based, it literally was like screens and cells from the animated show.
That's
right.
Great.
So like the rights on that has to be like up in space.
Yeah.
I do want to say one thing. The other impact this game has had on me, my first Spidey game, is that it used audio from everywhere, right? Like it would use it from the show, but they had this one clip whenever you would use a police car. It was this clip, and it was a woman that I remember hearing it as like 73.5, Code 6, and like it was this thing. And then I heard it so much as a kid because I would play that game often, and you hear that sound every time you used a police part. every movie, every TV show, everything with like a cop has that audio cue. It has this, like, every single time you see a police go over to their car, it's that's the woman on the radio saying, like, 73.5, Code 6, like, it's the sound. I ended up looking this up because I was like, this is a thing. And the most people can think of what it is that she's saying Liberty 285, Code 6, 105 North Avenue. But, like, the next time anyone watches anything with cops and stuff, look for this sound cue because it is used over and over and over and over and over. It's like, it's,
I want people to weigh in on this. Super@posterrecaps.com. Hit us up. I want to know.
You've heard it. You have heard it. It is more prevalent to me than the Wilhelm scream. It is everywhere. Because
the Wilhelm scream is everywhere, so.
It is everywhere, but this is literally in everything.
Amazing.
From movies to shows. Like, it's nuts. So that stuck with me, but because that audio cue was there from this, it's, I hear it every single time now.
Yeah.
But, so that was my first foray into it. Since then, there was, like, a ton of other stuff. I think, for me, I don't know if you've ever played these, but do you ever play the fighting games?
Like the Capcom stuff.
Games?
The Capcom stuff. I like that, like Street Fighter versus the Marvel Universe, everything like that.
Yes.
I loved Street Fighter as a kid was my stuff.
I was the
shitty kid who would play as E Honda, and just as soon as the match started, I was already 1,000 arm slapping my way against whoever I was up against. So I really loved like old school Street Fighter. But the Marvel versus Capcom stuff, I mostly just kind of enjoyed from a remove and like really appreciated like the aesthetics of it. I always thought it looked incredibly cool.
Yeah, they had that weird cell shading effect for the characters. And I remember I was obsessed with like the same thing, like the Marvel superheroes and then the versus Street Fighter and then Marvel versus Capcom. One of my earliest jobs was at a movie theater, and they had inside the little game room next to it Marvel vs. Capcom 2, and I would play it constantly. And Spider-Man was like one of the most fun characters to play in that game. So that was another thing where he was so involved in. Like, you couldn't do a Marvel game without Spider-Man. But the ones, I think, that showed like what you're talking about, right? Like, to get to be Spider-Man, that I think shaped where a lot of games ended up now. Like, I feel like Arkham Asylum wouldn't be here if not for this, was way back when in PlayStation 1 days, they released a Spider-Man game, Spider-Man 1, and then they did a sequel, Spider-Man 2, Enter Electro. And that game was where you were like, you were Spider-Man. They did an intro. I believe Bruce Campbell was your tutorial level dude, narrating.
Amazing.
And that was where you were swinging around New York with like the style of physics that like, That was the early days of being able to actually feel like you're web swinging and like open world style, like, oh, there's a crime. We got to go take care of it. Like, this was that game. And I remember as a kid playing it for the first time and being like, holy crap. Like, this is so much fun. So like web swing around and like to have the different Spidey outfits that you could unlock and play. That was when I feel like the first foray into me really liking Spider-Man. And then they did the same thing like that. That spawned. From there, they use those mechanics into the Spider-Man, the movie, the game, Spider-Man 2, the game. That ability to web swing around, all leading up to, I think, its pinnacle achievement, which is the most recent one, the Insomniac's Spider-Man, Marvel Spider-Man game, which I played last year, I want to say, and was blown away by how good that was. Like, if you want a game, if you want to understand what it feels like to be Spidey, play that game. That game, to me, was one of the things that happened that really unlocked Spidey in a way that hadn't. Like, we were talking about, like, I liked Spidey. I enjoyed watching a lot of the series. They had such an impact, but I finally understood why people like Spider-Man so much playing that game and watching Spider-Verse. I would say, like, those are the two big things.
Swinging around, you know, from tree to tree. It's amazing. Super fun.
It's great. You got to, I think when you visited, you got to see a little bit of us doing that,
I've
swinging around
a little
New
bit
York.
Because I've had friends who have the game. I'm one of those weirdos who like, I almost prefer to watch like somebody proficiently play a game than play the game myself because I'm typically so bad at it. Even though, again, not to brag, I've said this before, I did get 100% on Final Fantasy VII Remake. So I really threw myself into that at the start of quarantine. And then I tried to play it again like 3 months later. I completely forgot how to play it. So I'm gonna have to retrain my brain how to play FF7 Remake. But I tried playing Spider-Man, and like I found myself like not that interested in like pushing the story forward because I was just loving the immersiveness of the world. And as a New Yorker, I was really adoring how much fun it was to swing all over Manhattan. It's so immersive. It's so much fun. And it's such a smooth playing experience. And I know a lot of people who aren't major gamers who kind of like cracked accidentally into like a little bit of like a gaming habit through this game, through Spider-Man. I think it's a little bit of like an on-ramp towards a video game addiction. So proceed with caution.
It's so great, though. I mean, like, it's like you said, like, you could just swing around and that could be money well spent because it's so much fun. But the game itself is so great. And the story, it's an original story that they'd use for this, which I think is something else that we're seeing now for Spider-Man. Again, taking those core elements of the character and telling brand new stories with him in ways that, like, introduce new context and modernized versions of them. It was so much fun. It was so excellent. And, like, I'm obsessed with costumes. Like, we're talking about video games, dude. That's my obsession. Like, I don't know what it is, but, like, when playing especially the Marvel games, like, from the original, like we talked about on PlayStation 1, the Spider-Man games, to Marvel Ultimate Alliance, which you play a bunch of different characters, the X-Men Legends game, this game especially, I think, was one of the best versions of doing how you can rotate through costumes. There's like 60 different costumes you can have throughout Spider-Man history, from the movies to other video games to, like, it's so awesome. And, like, I love that. And that game really delivered on this weirdo aspect that I'm super into for stuff. So, like, this game is my obsession. And it really, again, it really made me love that character. So another reco, if you want to try out video games, definitely go for this Spider-Man game. And an exciting thing is that they did announce a sequel that is actually hitting at long last.
It's coming out this week, Thursday, right?
I think when this podcast maybe is dropping, it's on November 12th, which, happy birthday to me.
I know, it's Kevin's birthday. If you're listening to this on the first run, November 12th, wish at Kev Mahadeo a happy birthday. And why don't you get him a birthday present by signing up for Post-Show Recaps Patreon. Patreon.com/Post-Show Recaps. How about you sign up at the Discord level? Show up in the Discord and wish Kevin a happy birthday yourself. You won't regret it. It's really a gift for yourself.
Well done, Wiggler. Well done.
Sorry, it was low-hanging fruit. I just had to snatch it.
Pick that low-hanging fruit. But I'm excited about that game, too. I'm really pumped to play that one because it continues the story, but it's Miles Morales focus, which is really exciting. It was just such a crazy experience how good that game was. Like, we talk about Spider-Man and Batman being the pinnacle. I think when it comes to, like, these types of games, Insomniac's Spider-Man and, like, the Arkham Asylum and Arkham City, I'm not going to talk about Arkham Knight, are great. Like, that's a pinnacle of showing, like, how to actually be those characters in a video game. It's really fun and really cool.
Yeah. So I'm excited for that as well, especially a game centering on Miles Morales, who I think is one of those. So with, like, we talked about all, like, the various Spider-Man and, like, the Ben Reilly, the Scarlet Spider, Dr. Octopus as Spider-Man. Miles Morales is the Spider-Man of the Ultimate Spider-Man side of the line. And Peter Parker, spoiler alert, I guess, but, foundational to Miles Morales' origin story, as in Into the Spider-Verse, the movie, Peter Parker dies. And Miles Morales ends up being the person who kind of, like, picks up the mantle through his own origin story. And he's, like, one of those versions of, like, another character is taking on the Spider-Man. The great power and responsibility of being Spider-Man and actually really sticking and becoming very culturally prominent and becoming a really beloved character to the point where it was remarkable to get Miles Morales front and center in Spider-Verse. But a lot of the questions are like, when are we getting him into the MCU? When are we getting Miles Morales? And, like, people are really, really, really psyched about that character. So for him to be starring at the heart of this video game, in addition to all of the other great stuff that's going around with Miles Morales as a character, is super fun and a really, really great natural expansion of Spider-Man and everything that character stands for as somebody who's just, like, good-hearted, very at the hub of a lot of different character relationships and also dealing with a lot of day-to-day struggle. I think that they do such a good job with that character, and the reviews for the Miles Morales Spider-Man game are I think pretty positive. It sounds like people are really into it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that Miles Morales being introduced was exciting for a number of reasons, right? You had a character who is half Black, half Latino, who's picking up the Spider-Man mantle, and such a well-developed and well-rounded character that people instantly liked. And I think what you said at the top of the hour is exactly what Miles represented, and ultimately what makes Spider-Man so good as a character, that we talked about, again, from his origins, right? the relatability, the thing that started what about Spider-Man and started the love of that character was how relatable he is. And Miles represents that because it's that idea of anyone could wear the mask. It's not about the powers. It's not about Spider. It's about the man. It's about the person underneath there. And that's the core of it, right? Like, it's about the person who goes through the daily struggles we do and the life struggles we do, but has this like extra layer of being Spider-Man and being a hero. And Miles represents that, I think, in a way that that led to the greatness that we saw in Into the Spider-Verse, the truism of Spider-Man that I think extends into pop culture and to make him so likable, because any one of us could be Spider-Man. You know, we want to be Superman. We want to be Batman. We strive to be those characters, but in a way, any one of us can feel like we could be Spider-Man, you know, like it just feels so real to us. And I think that's what makes that character so popular and so powerful. And Miles represents that to a T. And we see it in Spider-Verse, but before Spider-Verse though, we got some movies that happened.
We got a lot.
We got movies that came in.
and I don't want to go too deep into it because this is going to be the bread and butter of the next several
weeks.
But you know, we're about to spend the next 3 weeks with Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man. And like I'm very excited to, because it's been a long time since I've watched these movies. But they were coming out like tail end of high school for me. Like this was like first serious high school girlfriend material, like going out to like a movie date stuff. Like this is like very nostalgic for me. And like at the very least, the first Spider-Man especially, and I know that there's a lot of like Spider-Man 2 is the best superhero movie ever, and like lots of like debate between which is the better of the two of the three Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies. No one's going to say Spider-Man 3, but is it 1 or 2? And I'm definitely coming into this team 1.
That's unlike you, by the way. That is very unlike you.
I know. Typically I like a sequel, but for me it's the first, because I cannot wait to get into Willem Dafoe.
Oh, yes.
As Norman Osborn. Ow!
Am I?
Like, there are just like so many things that like to this day, Godspeed, Spider-Man, that I just like, I feel like I still say,
oh yeah,
we'll meet again, Spider-Man. You know, there's just so much stuff from it.
That I
absolutely adore, that like Willem Dafoe as Norman Osborn as the Green Goblin might be my all-time favorite superhero bad guy. Just like absolutely incredible, and for like probably all the wrong reasons, but maybe we can see if there's anything really thematically interesting to talk about when we get there. But like Tobey Maguire, like hit or miss for a bunch of people, but I'm always going to feel very nostalgic about his portrayal of that character, because it was just a movie like that. Like you hadn't seen a movie like that, like really competently made to that level in a while, like in the 90s, like leading up to this. Like I guess now we're starting to get into X-Men. We're coming out of Blade, though. Those are hard R movies. You know, X-Men is sort of in this space. And these are still like the movies that are like, it's like giving you a hit, even if it's not like the full dose that the MCU, like really just like hook it up to my veins, like of like full on nerdery. Like we're talking about X-Men movies where they still have not been able to put them in yellow and blue spandex. Here, you got to like give him organic web shooters. You can't have him science the shit out of some web shooters. So there's things to like pick at, but I have a lot of fondness for these films. A real fondness for the cast, a real fondness for the filmmaking, as somebody who adored Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness being two of my favorite movies from the 90s. Not that they were from the 90s, but in the 90s, like discovering those movies as like a young guy, like, you know, 13, 14, and like seeing those. And like then that guy's going to make Spider-Man. And a lot of the ways that Sam Raimi just works just has translated across even his shittiest movies. So I'm really excited to spend some time in that space. I'm less excited to talk about Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man movies, even though I love Andrew Garfield. And I actually interviewed Andrew Garfield during this time of his career when he was playing Spider-Man. I felt like he was someone who had all of like the right things to say about Spider-Man as a character, what he represents, what he means. And actually, I always got the sense that he almost felt like I shouldn't be playing Spider-Man. So like there's something about the amazing Spider-Man movies that I think like there is like a level of awareness that like we're just doing this to make more Spider-Man movies. There isn't a good reason to be making these movies.
We just want money. And I think
they just want money. So I've got no nostalgia for those, but I'm interested to do the autopsy on both of them. How about you? How are you feeling as we're like on the edge of talking Toby for a few weeks?
I'm pretty excited about this. I mean, you know, the Spider-Man movies, I believe the order actually was Spider-Man 1 and then X-Men 1. But I remember seeing these in theaters. I could be wrong on the order, but I remember seeing both these movies in theaters. I remember for Spider-Man 1, I literally did one of those things where I watched it with one group of friends, walked out of the theater, saw my other group of friends about to go in, turned back around and went in with them to watch it again. Because it was such a fun, great movie at the time. And I think we hadn't really seen anything quite like it for these characters. So there's some good memories. I'm really pumped to talk about it. I'm really pumped to talk about the faults that exist now. I'm excited to talk about the little details, like you mentioned, organic web shooters, but honestly, I'm pro organic web shooters.
All right. Well, we'll talk about it.
Remember back at Wizard in the good old Wizard days, we used to have these debate columns that we do, where each person would write a side of an argument from the nerd space. And we did like a giant Spider-Man special at the time where we debated all the various things that had changed from Spider-Man in the comics to now. Like, should Spider-Man be married? Should he have organic web shooters or self-made web shooters? All these arguments that we'd have. And I argued organic web shooters, and I argued one other one that I don't remember. But the organic web shooters, I definitely remember because I stand by that one. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to go into a lot of that stuff. As for the Andrew Garfield part, I think it's going to be interesting in another way. I mean, if we're really looking at this as a dissection of Spider-Man as a character and what makes him work and what makes him tick, I think it's going to be a fun watch in terms of maybe tearing it apart a bit about like how not to do that character, like how missing the mark. If Miles Morales is the epitome of what makes Spider-Man work, I think those movies, that first one especially, that I've seen and I could dissect.
Well, you can't weigh in on number two.
I will once I watch it, but had a lot of problems immediately about like missing the mark about who the character is and why that character works so well and has worked so well. So I'm excited to dive into this stuff. I'm excited to really pull it apart and kind of poke and prod, and also really talk about Spider-Man 3, because that one, oh boy, oh boy.
It's gonna be a good time. It's gonna be fun. We have a couple of bits of trivia that were compiled by the great Professor Strunk, who, speaking of Spider-Man 3, maybe we're gonna pull Professor Strunk from behind the curtain to put him in front of a microphone right around the time Venom shows up on screen for the first time. But Professor Strunk compiled some trivia surrounding Spider-Man, and one is that there were feature adaptations of Spider-Man that had been in the works for a long time, like a lot of different movies that almost came to light. And I should say that Sam Raimi's Spider-Man comes out 2 years after the first X-Men movie. So X-Men lands first and then Spider-Man.
Nice.
For Spider-Man, apparently Michael Jackson once tried to buy Spider-Man from Marvel.
Yes.
So he could play Spider-Man is a thing.
I had heard this before. And this is a great piece of trivia that was pulled out. Apparently Michael Jackson was a huge, huge fan of Spider-Man, the character, and wanted to play him. So his idea was, of course, buy Spider-Man so that he could play that character, which would have been really interesting because there's so much debates now about, Miles Morales or just turn Peter Parker, you know, make Peter Parker a black character. If it was just back in the 90s, if that had happened, even if Michael Jackson was just like, boom, like that would have been an interesting thing.
Wild. Yeah, that's a weird footnote in history. There was also apparently a version of Spider-Man where Tom Cruise was being considered for Peter Parker. Bob Hoskins as Dr. Octopus. R.I.P. That would have been amazing. It's a he, Mario. Stan Lee as J. Jonah Jameson. I guess I could see it.
I could definitely see it.
Hepburn for Aunt May. Like, I don't know how real this is, or if this is just the stuff of like internet mythology. But fun to consider, like all the different versions that could. And Spider-Verse does such a great job with this, of like having Chris Pine be the voice of one Spider-Man. They do a really good job of just like anybody could be Spider-Man, you know, like so many different actors could have been Spider-Man.
Yeah,
there's a lot of different versions of this. This is my favorite piece of trivia from Strunk. In Spider-Man, the animated series, only three punches were ever thrown due to censorship from Fox. Is that true?
That is very true.
No one was allowed to punch each
other?
That
is correct. I remember this.
How did they fight?
He would kicks? Web swing kick or like web in and like collide with the person. This was a weird thing because this is... it's so crazy because I remember this also for the X-Men animated series because it also had rules and regulations. And for a long time, I always thought to myself, like, the X-Men animated series and the Spider-Man animated series doesn't hold up because of like, they can't use real guns. They have to use lasers because, again, sensors, right? Spider-Man can't punch anyone. And I do think if you look at it in terms of that, it doesn't hold up. But I think... the stories they do and like the stuff they accomplish in terms of like the grander mythos is amazing. Like that stuff holds up to me. Like I was doing an X-Men rewatch a little while ago and there's little things that don't work, but like the other stuff works. The drama works. It still is really great and really well structured and put together. And as we said, I kind of want to do the Spider-Man deep dive, but I do remember that being a thing where Spider-Man can't punch people. And it's like, that's crazy. It's wild.
If you end up rewatching the show, you got to report back every time there's a punch. I need to know, is this true?
One punch, one.
feels ridiculous. Feels absolutely ridiculous. All right, so we're gearing up here. The deck is set. This is a character that is near and dear to the hearts of a lot of people. I've got a lot of fondness for Spider-Man personally. I've got so much fondness for the Raimi movies as like an era of my life. And we'll dive into that deeper once we get into it next week. So that's your homework, folks. Check out Sam Raimi's first Spider-Man movie, the first Tobey Maguire movie. That's what you got to watch by next week. Send us your scores, super@postshowrecaps.com. And just to reset what you're scoring, rank the movies 0 to 6. Rank the villains 0 to 6. Rank the suits, the Spider-Man costumes, 0 to 6. And rank the Spider-Men themselves, 0 to 6. Send all of that in super@postshowrecaps.com along with your feedback. We will read that on the podcast. Kevin, anything else before we swing away from our first shot at Spidey?
One last thing I do want to throw in that the great professor recommended, and this doesn't have to be official, right? Like this can be one of our unofficial things. He said something for us to discuss is what is the most New York thing in each movie, and I kind of love that. Yeah. As New Yorkers, yeah. I kind of want to delve like looking at these movies because there's definitely things where I'm just like, oh god.
I would be very happy to have like an only in New York segment or never in
never
New York.
Never New York. I love it. Just yeah, like, yeah, never New know, York like just, is like parts of happen. The like, if you mess with one of us, you mess, get out of here.
That's not how it's going to
play. No, the most New York from my memory is like, what's his face? Like,
he's just a boy. You know, that's not going to happen.
I forget the Jim Norton, I think, is the actor who does the just like, I don't know. He stinks and I don't like him. Like, that is a New York moment, but I'm excited to discuss those parts.
Yeah. So, okay, cool. Yeah, we'll track some New York stuff that can maybe be like our informal rankings. We can maybe not rank stuff, but we could just talk New York. seems like that would be fun. Like that's like the rest of it is like we do this for you, the New York stuff we'll do for us. that's purely self-service. Kevin Mando, Kevin and I and LaTanya Starks, we're talking Mandalorian every week. We're 2 episodes deep into season 2. As this podcast is dropping, we are about 24 hours away from week 3 of Mando season 2. Those podcasts drop on Mondays. Strong recommend. Check it out. If you're watching Mando, you should listen to the podcast. We're having a really great time with LaTanya on that show.
Yeah, it's a great season as well. It's been both amazing watching it and amazing talking to you guys about it. We had a lot of fun, especially on the most recent episode, which was episode 2, first season 2. It's a blast, guys. It's a blast heading out to a galaxy far, far away and having so much fun there after some time not having as much fun there.
Yeah. So check that out. Check out everything else we got going on in post-show recaps, whether it's Down the Hatch, it's Aang in there, it's Star Trek Discovery, it's Fear of the Walking Dead World Beyond. So many things happening. And of course, everything that's happening on the patron side of things, movies. We do movies. We got the movies at Post-Show Recaps Theater. We're doing community building, our attempt at a community somewhat watch. It's a complicated thing. You have to listen to the podcast to really understand what we're doing over there. And also watch it with Wiggler, where I barf words into a microphone and tell you what I'm watching. on any given week. So if all of that sounds interesting to you, and if you want to be a part of the post-show recaps patron Discord community where we're just chatting, having a good time, talking to people, talking to the listeners, post-show recaps directly one-on-one, it's fun. You can sign up patreon.com/postshowrecaps. Kevin, how can people send you a gift for your birthday? Should they, what do you want? What's your, follow Kevin at Kev Mahadeo. That's
yeah,
step one.
I guess follow is a good one. You know, it's wild because like Robin has been asking the same thing. My fiance is
like pizza?
What do you want? Oh, I do love pizza. Yeah. I'm excited. We're going to order sushi, which is like my favorite type of food. On my birthday, yeah. I don't know what I want. Just yeah, give me a shout out. Give me a happy birthday. That'd be nice.
Give me
stop
happy
the
birthday.
Madness of the world. If you are capable of doing so, please the do madness. That. That would be the best, best birthday gift.
No one person can
it's
do
true.
That. There is something to be said about great power, great responsibility, but I'm not going to be the one to say that. Instead, what I will say is we didn't talk about it nearly enough. Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, the musical. I do feel like I shirked my duty.
This is
here.
Your chance. If you want to weigh in, you have seen it, which is, I think, a key.
I saw it twice.
That's
saw it
the
twice.
Insanity. That is.
Saw it twice.
Why?
Saw it twice. Because the great Emily Fox, my wife, for my birthday 1 year, bought tickets to Spider-Man the musical as a surprise. And this was back when it was on Broadway and everyone was dying as they were involved in the show, like people falling from the skies. So many accidents, and the script was just a mess. I guess the book was a mess. Spider-Man's normal nemesis is Norman Osborn. He's defeated in Act 1, and then in Act 2, he's up against a spider goddess named Arachne.
Oh, God.
Who is responsible for the creation of Spider-Man.
Oh, boy.
But then it was so poorly received that they shut it down, also to address like the safety concerns, and then they started it back up with a rejiggered script, which was good. Because the guy who was playing Norman Osborn, the Norman Osborn character was the best part of the thing. You can't kill him in Act 1, so they kept him for both acts. They extended him for the full arc. They rewrote it. I had a colleague who had preview tickets to it for work, and he took me to see it. So I had seen the first one, and now I'd seen the second one. And the arc of improvement was from like a 0 out of 100 to like a 63 out of 100. So not good,
still an F.
but a remarkable arc of improvement.
Big change,
absolutely,
big change.
Absolutely
right.
Incredible. But like that's how popular Spider-Man is. They made a musical, but he's not so popular that the musical was worth making.
Yeah, he's so popular they made a musical,
disaster.
But not popular enough that they made a good musical.
Financial and emotional ego disaster for everyone involved, I'm sure. Although I don't know that you could ever really truly bruise Bono and the Edge's.
I was going to say, wasn't that?
Yeah. Untouchable. Man. Yeah. Yeah. Well, just to remind you, we will close out this podcast now with a track from Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark from U2's very
good
own
God.
Bono and the Edge. We'll be back next week to talk about Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. Take care, everybody. Bye.
You can change your mind, but you cannot change your heart. Your heart knows when you're hiding.